CinemaSins has a fan club. It's called the Sin Club, and members get all sorts of things like early episodes, bonus videos, merch discounts, and even monthly bonus podcasts. Membership starts at $3 a month, and you can sign up now at patreon.com/CinemaSins.
It's going to be all nights from now on.
You're only nights may apply. Only nights may apply. Yeah.
That's right.
Welcome to SinCast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the SinCast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined by Barrett Scher.
Hello.
And Jonathan Watkins.
Hello, hello.
Today we have a very special guest. It is director Lena Rosler, who has made a movie called Best Sellers that is in theaters and on demand September 17th. Lena, welcome.
Thanks. Hey, everyone. Happy to be here.
Yeah. How did you get involved with this project?
Well, I was part of a talent lab at TIFF, at the Toronto Film Festival. Mm-hmm. And they take about 20 sort of emerging filmmakers from around the world. And then you're supposed to make a self-portrait film, like a 2-minute self-portrait, which is everybody's worst nightmare, obviously.
right.
And so we all had to do it, and I've made mine. And at this lab, there are mentors that come to kind of guide you and help you. And one of the mentors was a guy named Cassian Elwes, who happens to be this amazing producer. And the first day of the lab, we all had to present our self-portraits on this huge screen in this theater. Everybody was like, like hiding under the seats. Just everyone's like nauseous with fear and anticipation. for whatever reason, Cassian, he loved my self-portrait. And he kind of came up to me afterwards. He's like, God, that's like amazing. I loved it, blah, blah. And he was just taken by it. And then he watched my other short films. And then at the end of the lab and at the end of the film festival, he sent me an email. And with the email came a script. And he was like, just take a look at this. Let me know what you think. And I was like, okay. And so,
yeah,
sure. I read it. I really love the script, and then we started talking about it, and that's sort of the beginning of how I ended up here talking with you guys today. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, and this is your feature debut, right?
It sure is. Yes, it is. It's the first one under my belt. Yeah.
So insanity, right? Your debut film stars Michael Caine. Did you know that? Did you know that Michael Caine is in your movie?
Can you remind me? No, just I need somebody to pinch me again, because it's sort of like, did that really happen? So you can confirm it, because now you've watched the film, right? I mean, it really is.
Right,
it is him.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's totally amazing. It's amazing.
And he's just like Harris Shaw in real life, right? That's Michael Caine, I take
mm-hmm.
it.
Michael is a sweetheart. He's a total gent. He's got all aspects of that character, I have to say. He's really a generous charming, like beautiful man, and he's just a lot of fun, you know. I can talk again. Yeah. We can talk about Michael forever. So yes, I was really really blessed to have a guy like that. This man, this actor, this legend, this knight in my film, in my first feature film. It's not lost on me. I still can't believe it.
It's going to be all knights from now on.
Only knights may apply. Only knights may apply. Yeah,
that's right. That's right.
So you can call me, I'm Lady Lena, and they're this. I don't know. I don't know how to do it. No, this joke isn't going to work. No, is it?
Well, Aubrey Plaza has been leading, right? I'm sure. So,
she should be. She's equally brilliant, and the two of them in this are amazing. And I'm definitely lucky to have these guys. They're actors of the highest caliber. Yeah.
I mean, it lends into, we've already sort of touched on it, but what is it like working with people like Michael Caine and Aubrey Plaza and Ellen Wong, who I love too?
Yeah. She's
how, what is it like working with these people, and how did they, did you need them at all to, sort of reel you in into this movie, or did they help you out at all in a way, or did you become best buds after this?
Oh my God. I wish Michael was my boyfriend. No.
Right.
No, I mean, they're both such, I was saying about Michael. I mean, he's just, and obviously he's not my boyfriend. His wife, Shakira, is beautiful and I love her as well. Right. It's good all
save.
Good.
Good save.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
At most respect. Yes.
Oh, she knows. Well,
you know, she wouldn't be surprised.
She listens to us, so that's good you made that. You made that point.
But she's both, he and her are the loveliest of people. And what can I say? Like, of course, I can't really remember. Like, did I need them to reel me in? Like, what was the question? Like,
I don't know. Was there a point where you were on set and you're like, I don't know what to do, and I'm angry and I'm, you know, frustrated, and then they, you know, they helped you out in any way or anything like that? I mean,
if that happened, I would never show it or admit it.
Yeah.
No, but I think it was more, you know, your job is sort of, it's the opposite. Like, they're coming to me, you know what I mean? It's it's my job to kind of like to catch the actors if they feel unstable, if they feel uncomfortable or you know. And I've been on the other side of things. I've been an actor as well, and really in my point of view, I think what we're asking of actors is nothing less than you know, just jump off this cliff and take off all your clothes and please just do that now, you know? And,
right.
And they're just like, what? And then, so you have to be at the bottom waiting to catch them, you know, like that's the main goal. And like, they have to feel comfortable. They have to trust you. They have to trust each other. There's a lot of stuff that goes into it. And even, it doesn't matter, you know, how long you've been doing it. Like a guy like Michael, of course, you can listen to him read the phone book. He can do it in his sleep. But at the same time, he wants to do it well. Like he, you know, after every take, he would look at me, was that all right, love? Like, was that okay? Like what, you know, and we would just talk about every lot, how to make it better, what was working, what wasn't. You know, if things weren't working, you know, of course they let me know. Like it's my job to kind of make it the most comfortable, the most easier environment for them to show their brilliance, to share their gift with us, you know. So and to kind of like guide that performance that has nothing to do with me. It's like their talent they're creating. We might talk about building the character, we might talk about motivations, we might talk about, you know, this particular situation, where are we in the script right now, like where, how to navigate those waters together, you know. And I guess I'm steering the big ship, but they're out in front, like, you know, with the wind in their face, you know. And I'm just like, okay, don't worry, I'm gonna sail you guys into safe harbor, you know, hopefully. So I don't know what with all the sailing metaphors coming from, but whatever. I hope you get what I'm saying here. So yeah. And of course, daunting, as it's the first feature and working with these two, but yeah, hopefully we all made it work together. Yeah.
Well, no, it was a dumb question on my part, because it's an idea that there's a bias that I'm sitting there thinking, well, this is your first feature debut. There must have been all sorts of nerves, and you know, you needed these experienced actors to come to you and tell you that, you know, hey, it's all gonna all be okay or whatever. And it's just a dumb question. Sorry about that.
No, so. But I mean, look, there's not a dumb question. I mean, it's fine to have any assumption or question. Mm-hmm. And obviously I was nervous. I mean, it would be crazy if I wasn't, right? I mean, that would be just
that but you refocused it right though. But they should be coming to you when there's some sort of question on the set and everything. They should be, you know, it's exactly right. So, you know,
well, otherwise it would be a real like the word, what kind of show is that? It's a something show. Yeah. So I don't know if I can swear on your.
No, you can swear all you want. Oh, God damn it, George, swear.
So, yeah. No, so that's your job to try to steer it. But yeah, of course, the first, especially meeting Michael on the first day on set, all that stuff, of course, you're trying to figure out, well, how are we going to work together? How are we going to connect with each other and how's that going to go? But luckily with the two of them, they're really genuine, authentic, and they want to make it work. So, you know, we were all there for the same reason. And
It's interesting how YouTube sort of plays into the plot of this movie.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's such an interesting thing. You watch so many movies growing up and YouTube's never been a thing, but now I see so many movies where YouTube is incorporated into the plot. Was that originally in the script, or did you have to shape some of the YouTube stuff? I love, by the way, the like teenage critic that's in this.
Oh, yeah.
you don't focus on her too much. You hear more stuff in the background that's funny. Yeah. As she keeps on ranting about this terrible book, by the way, and then like, with stacks of books around her and everything, which I think is so funny. Was that in the script? Like how, because at the beginning of this, you know, just, I guess as some background, Michael Caine is playing a writer who hasn't written anything in like 50 years or something like that. His first book was a big deal and he's under contract for a second book, but they never came around to ask for that second book. Now this struggling publishing company wants to try to get a second book out of him. So Aubrey Plaza goes around with Michael Caine trying to drum up some publicity for it. But there's a point where YouTube is making him a star, but it's not selling the book. And then it gets further incorporated when Aubrey Plaza finds a way to use YouTube to sell the book. So was all of that in the script, or did you have to kind of decide how is this book tour going when you made this?
This was part of the script. It was like, it was YouTube and Twitter and things like that. Definitely the idea that he becomes a star, despite himself on social media with nothing to do with the work that he's produced. Right. And just like based on his antics and his, you know, politically incorrect, comments and his personality. So the writer, Anthony Greco, I mean, this is his, it's his script, and mm-hmm. and this was in that was in it. As far as the young critic for Dragons of Orion, things like that. Obviously, that's it's my job. I cast her. I put the certain books and play how she's and like allowed her to improvise and like, oh, you're gonna whisper. You say this about it, that about, you know, this kind of stuff to embellish it. But the idea, of course, of that it's an inherent part of the story of the script, and that was there from the get-go, and that was and that's in Anthony's script.
Mm-hmm. While we're talking about YouTube, I have to ask, was this archival footage of Michael Caine back in the day?
Yeah.
when Aubrey is looking at that, I figured there's only so much makeup can do. This is a young Michael Caine, correct?
You are 100% correct. Yes, mm-hmm. It is. And it was really nice to be able to use that. And also we also used the photo of him and the character's wife is a photo of Michael and Shakira.
Oh, wow.
Mm. And so there's a lot of little personal Easter eggs in the film that I think kind of also because, Michael, he's obviously a certain point of his life, and And it was kind of nice to recognize that and to kind of hopefully subtly kind of acknowledge that in a little bit, like this journey that he's been on. So that archival footage, I mean, what he's saying is what he was saying in the interview, though. You know, we didn't
change.
Which
works perfectly.
Perfectly. So it's sort of like, there's a real interesting parallel. I'm not at all suggesting that he's an alcoholic writer like he is in this script. Of course not. You know, but I'm saying that it was fun to kind of find these parallels, these kind of life journey kind of ideas for a guy who's had success. He does have some things in common with this character. There's no doubt about it. And it made it, you know, more personal. So I think that was a really nice thing that we could do. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's fun. It must have been fun finding something that's out of context, but somehow incorporates into your movie perfectly and everything. Did you personally run through that, or did you have somebody look for stuff that looked?
No, like we, me and my editor. Yeah, we found we were looking, and then like this happened to be a really like a perfect kind of moment, you know. So. Mm-hmm. And then we had to go get things clear. And so that, for example, wasn't in the script. Like that's something that we put in, you know, afterwards. Yeah. Yeah.
You dedicated this movie to your dad. Could you talk can you talk about your dad?
Yeah, I can. My dad passed away right before we started shooting the film.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so, you know, it's good timing. But you know, my dad, I guess it was personal too, because my dad loved books. He brought the love of books to me and my family and my sisters. And, you know, we would go on vacation together and like read, like nerds, like nerd mm-hmm. family. And obviously the story became really, really kind of personal because it is also like a surrogate father daughter kind of love story. This mm-hmm. this story with Aubrey and Michael with Harris and Lucy, and mm-hmm. and I think I was able to, and even before that was kind of clear to me in the story, but then with my dad passing away, like really right before we started to shoot, I was able to bring a lot of that stuff into the film, into their relationship, into how those dynamics can work. And more than that too, it's kind of weird to say, but my dad looked like Michael Caine.
And, oh, really?
And the weirdest thing is my dad would tell us stories he told us lots of stories, but one story, in the 70s, he was in the department store Fortnum and Mason in London. And he says he's in the department store. He's like walking up the stairs. And then he's noticed this couple is following him. They're like walking up the stairs behind him. He's like, what? And then he goes down the stairs. They go down the stairs. And he goes across. They go across. Finally, he turns to them. He's like, can I help you? And it's Michael Caine and Shakira. And then Michael is like, I'm sorry, but you're my doppelganger. We just had to get a better look. And then they had this kind of like meeting. So, and this is like in the 70s, right? I wasn't around at that point. So, mm-hmm. So everything was kind of this, and then, it was such a weird, special kind of thing to be working with Michael and knowing that they'd had that weird random meeting so many years ago. And then of course, he recently passed away. So I also got to put a lot of things, you know, that my dad liked personally in the film too, like other little personal Easter eggs that only people that grew up with me would know, or, you know, my friends or my family. So a lot of that was laced into the film. But most importantly, I think I could bring that to the relationship between these characters. And of course, then mm-hmm. her actual relationship, the character's relationship, Lucy's relationship with her father in the film, who's not actually Michael Caine. So it really is this story that's about fathers and daughters as well, you know? So
yeah.
So yeah, it became important. And it wasn't, it was actually really nice. It was the producers who suggested that I make that dedication. And
oh, really?
Yeah. And I, first I felt really weird about it, but, and then didn't know where to put it. You know, like, do you put it, where do you,
so yeah,
you make all these choices. And then I was like, oh God, I can't make this, this is the weird, this is the, for some reason, the hardest choice of all the hundreds and millions of choices you make in the film. But then it was my editor. He's like, we're putting it here. I was like, okay.
Somebody else make the decision.
Yeah. You, for that one. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you get a chance to bring that story up to Michael Caine?
Oh yeah. Yes. So I think when he came to, we met a few times, of course, before. And then when he came to Montreal, I think the first time we were eating, we went to the Ritz and we were having like a little tea. And so I brought the story, and then it was funny. He finished it. I was like, and then he turned to, and he's like, and he was my doppelganger. And I was like, yeah, that's it. So I mean, it's like he knew the end of the story, but then, and then something happened. Then like some, I think then somebody else came or something like that. And we didn't talk about it again, but I felt like either he just knows the end of the story because he's done it. And you know, but we never kind of talked about it again. And that was like, that was it though. It was.
I wonder if he remembered.
No, that's
Wouldn't
what
that
I mean.
Be crazy.
Yeah, I don't know. Because then we didn't talk about it. Because then, like everything else just started happening. You know, then I completely was trying not to think about my dad. You know, because then things were getting a bit emotional sometimes in the film and stuff. So I was just really trying to focus on everything else. And so, yeah, but. Yeah, either he remembered or he knew the end of the story before I did. So
this is something that he does all the time.
He says it to everybody. He's like, "You're my doppelganger." Although I didn't hear him do it once during our time together, so I'm not sure.
I do have a couple of practical questions for you.
Okay.
Especially because you're saying that you know, this is your first feature, even though you had some shorts and everything.
Yeah.
The camera work in this film is really fascinating to me. How you set up the shots, especially a lot of overhead shots. You know, from when they're in the basement to walking
stairs.
Up the stairs.
Yeah.
To when Harris is writing. Of course, the whole key sequence is as they're going to different motels. Did you derive inspiration from other works, or is this kind of just like your personal style of, I want to frame this like this? You know, you've got the inside of the bookstore when Alan Wong is walking outside of it. And then you've got the outside of the bookstore when Michael Caine does his thing later on in the movie. How did you kind of develop that aesthetic?
This. Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, first of all, I can't say that there's like inspiration. I think the inspiration is the story, you know, the script. Mm-hmm. And the characters. So as soon as I read the script, I had a really strong sense of what their environments are like. For example, who they are as people. So I thought really, it was really clear to me, like, so Aubrey, at the beginning, you know, even the lenses that we chose are really, There's sort of subtlety at the beginning of the film, the really sharper lenses that she's sort of really set up. She's square. She's always in the center of the frame. You know, she's more like uptight and type A, and everything has to be sort of perfect. And that also goes into production design of her house and her office, all this stuff. Mm-hmm. That stair, the stair shot was an accident, because we just found that on the thing. And I was like, oh, let's make it so that it's the basement. And we did like, yeah, so that was also just cool. But the overhead, I always knew I wanted, like, as far as sequences of shots, it's just fun to do. It's more fun to do timeline stuff like that. So you have her opening a box of books, taking out the books, then it rides on the other side, she's packing the books, then on the other side, opening the books, taking them out. And then same with the motel things, overhead keys. And it's more fun to do. I had all the cast and the crew put their hands in to do those shots. So like,
oh really?
Oh wow.
Yes, it's like a key grip is like grabbing one thing, or like other people are playing the motel thing. You know,
and everybody's like, "That's my hand. That's my hand."
Yeah, everyone wanted to be like, yeah, it was fun. We had a lot of fun with that. We did like, and you know, not all of them got to be used, but we, you know, it's just like fun. And my cinematographer is amazing, and her name's Claudine Sauvé, and together we worked like really, really well. And she understood sort of right away, you know, the look I wanted to do. And then as they, so Aubrey's world is this like, or Lucy's world, I should say, is this really sort of straight, square kind of thing at the beginning of the film. And then Michael or Harris is way more, you know, much more warmer colors. It's kind of like weird shaped lens, like it's a little bit skewed. And then when they go on this trip together, she starts kind of like moving into his world a little more. The things get a little bit more hazy. She sort of starts unraveling at the same time that he does. So things get sort of almost like drunken camera movement to kind of reflect like, you know, their journey on this trip. So all those choices are, you know, specific. They're there for a reason. And I'm glad you noticed, like, because all that stuff should, if you're, you know, if we did the job well, then hopefully that's informing, you know, the story in a subconscious way too, to the audience, like, oh, here we go. And it really kind of feeds into the story and the characters. So it's all part and parcel of this world, you know, it all comes together like that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the story within the story. I mean, I definitely could see as Lucy is unraveling, especially when they're all hitting the scotch.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of does get a little fuzzy around the edges. There's a great moment when Harris is wandering around on the street where you literally have a POV of a drunk person, right? We've all had that moment. Anybody that's drunk has had that moment where the eyes get blurry and then they come into focus and then they get blurry again. And that sort of thing is, the camera or the way that you shot this, I think definitely informed the story and the characters, but it became a character itself. I just really appreciate the level of detail that you put into all of
this. That's great. Thank you. We're really proud of it. And I love working with Claudine. And that's her handheld camera as, you know, Harris's POV and like manipulating the focus of these crazy cool lenses that we got. And I'm glad to hear you say
no,
so.
You can nerd out. Hey, if you want to talk about lenses,
No. Anyway, it's real funny because you know, there's always like a fight for certain things that you want or can't get on films and stuff like that. So we're happy that we got the lenses that we wanted. And so it all works.
We also got to hear Michael Caine call two little girls wankers, which is awesome. And the little girls thinking it was awesome and not knowing what wankers meant. That there's a triple threat to that joke, and I like that a lot. So
I'm glad you appreciate that. This is good. I'm with like high-minded individuals who appreciate this kind of sense of humor.
That's great.
And that would be the equivalent of like Samuel L. Jackson like calling you a motherfucker. You'd be like, cool.
You'd be like, oh my God.
That's
you'd be
so
like,
awesome.
Yeah, you'd call everyone you know and be like, guess what just happened?
The other thing, hey, you know, I'm sure some of this was in the script, but do you get, you know, Michael Caine doing a bunch of bloodies? It's like, it's bloody this, it's bloody this. It's like getting Ian McKellen to say, "Fly, you fools," or something like that. You know, if you're going to have Michael Caine, you need to have some bloodies in there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Otherwise, you're wasting your opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. And he has no problem with that at all. He's totally happy to do it. Yeah. Yeah.
I do wonder how many times you heard the word bullshite.
First off,
in the final cut, but I imagine in the editing room, you probably heard this Did you count that up for us? Did you, know how many?
No, we should. We should do that as like some trivia. Oh, that would be a good drinking game for this.
Oh my god!
Wouldn't it? It would be really. You need like a warning label on the thing. Actually, yeah, don't do it, kids.
Everyone's liver fails.
Oh god, yeah, true. Don't do it. I take it back. Don't do it. It's too many times for safety, for your health. Yeah, but a lot. That's the answer. A lot. And I think everybody in the crew got to say it like many, many times as well, because in those bar scenes, you know, a lot of times with, we don't have so many extras and whatever. So all of us were participating and you know, I love like once or twice I can hear my first AD's voice, like yelling bullshit.
Oh my God, he really got the whole crew involved between the hands and the bullshit and all that.
I had a great crew. I loved it. And they were amazing. Like I think we all just had a really good time. Like we were, and again, it was my first time working with most of them, so it was just a really cool opportunity for everybody, and like a fun environment, what an opportunity for all of us to work with these great actors, and yeah, we're all in Montreal and in the cold of the winter, but still, like we just had a great time. It's just fun.
Was this all filmed in Montreal?
Yeah,
it's so New York-y, though.
Except that's not true. Except we did go to New York for a couple of days. What am I saying? But
I was gonna say, that's amazing.
No. We did do like the bridge. Obviously, we didn't reconstruct the bridge. We didn't do that. Maybe for the next one. No. No. That's the real. That's the real deal. Yeah. So I take that back. Nice. But we had like 2 days in New York, and the rest was in Montreal. Yeah.
I don't know if it's just me. I haven't seen a lot of interviews with Aubrey Plaza. She's probably all over the place with interviews, but I don't really know what she's like. I think a lot of people know her as April Ludgate on Parks and Recreation the most, but she's been in a ton of she's been in the whole spectrum of movies, like, you know, the broad comedies, and then she's been in a lot of arty films and everything. What is she like, just as a performer? How do you talk to her? How does she, you know, what is her process? All of that. What is she like as a person?
Well, I think Aubrey, like, obviously she's a super talented, individual, you know, she like, and as you say, everybody knows her from that character and from a particular sort of style of comedy, a style of delivery, you know,
right?
And that's and she's got like this. It's sort of like this is what everybody recognizes and expects, and yeah, to a certain extent, of course, that's part of her, you know. This is also how she has like, you know, evolved as an actor, but. Of course, there's way more to everybody than just like one little piece. So she has so much more depth and a lot of you know, emotional kind of life that I think was really a cool and unique opportunity to kind of show both sides of the spectrum. Like I at the beginning of this film, you know, Lucy's sort of freaking out in the office after she has like a disaster with Harris. Like Harris does his first book launch. I don't want to give away the movie too much, but they come back from that and everybody's trying to cancel all his tours, and she's on the phone and she's just like going crazy. Like, oh no, like, and all of that was, we did a whole bunch of improv, you know, like I just let her go. Like, it's like, go, you know, do your thing. Like, and she can excel at that. Like she can, you know, she's funny. She's on top of stuff like that. She's aware. She's also like aware of like physical comedy, and of course, like how she's moving her face and her expressions, and you know, all that stuff is great. And then to bring the other side, I think, you know, I'm really quite proud of her performance in this, because we start out like this, and she's like really wound tight. This the character. And and then we get to see her kind of unravel. And as she does, she softens, you know, like it's like she's got this kind of hard edge around her that's kind of, and it's mask. It's just a big mask of like gesture and putting things sort of straight laced and stuff like that. But then as she gets to go, as a character gets to go on this tour, we see this sweater, like the threads kind of like start fraying a little bit at the seams. Yeah. They start kind of like softening up. And then underneath that is this like, emotional, like individual in this character in this film who've been hurt, who've got their own issues, who've got insecurities and like a deep sort of heart, you know? So, and that's what makes this character of Lucy connect with Harris. Finally, he gets to see her real self. She reveals that like accidentally almost and shows her true heart, her true self. And then, and then this character of Harris who thinks that everything is bullshit, she finally throws off this veneer of, you know, quote unquote bullshit. And underneath that is like this real authentic kind of beautiful person with all their faults and foibles and stuff like that, but still authentic and genuine, and that's a truth. That's reality. That's what being human is, you know. So so I think she was able to take that character on this journey and really show that and show her vulnerability at the end and kind of have a really nice arc and take that character on this journey. So I think she did a really great job and proud of her work on that. Yeah.
It's a really great character arc. I think that, and I know that's, she did a great job, the writing, the directing, everything. But because I love how she starts off, you've already kind of said some of this, where she starts off, so, you know, so sure of herself and all that. And then has to deal with the reality of some things, and which includes like, you know, I don't want to give anything away, but, you know, she learns things about her dad who she's up to that point been doing everything kind of for. So I found that really interesting. And her and Michael Caine, the characters just grow together, you know, so well. It's a really fun ride to go on them with.
I'm glad you say so. It's kind of beautiful to watch them, and it's just like a nice story. I mean, if I had nothing to do with it, you know, it's hard for me to talk about it without sounding like I'm, you know, I'm obviously a fan of their performances.
Yeah.
But no, I really am. Like I think I'm just really proud of them together, and it's just, they made a really beautiful connection with these two characters, and it's really sort of, it's nice to see that you want to believe that would happen in real life between some completely unlikely two people like this. Like why couldn't it happen? You know, that's what I said at the beginning, like this sort of surrogate father daughter, but it is still, it's a love story between these two characters, like not romantic in any way, obviously, but like, you know, it's really nice. It's a really true friendship kind of story. So, yeah.
Tell us about Cary Elwes and his, I guess what you would call Truman Capote, character in this. He appears, this is something that's very well paced for me because Lucy's trying to tell Harris, you got to be good to this guy. He's walking towards them as she's saying
that. Yeah.
You gotta kiss this guy's ass. He's the most amazing reviewer. And just immediately Harris is like, I ain't having any of this shit. But tell us the story behind Cary Elwes getting into this movie and playing this character.
Well, what's kind of awesome about this is, so Cassian Elwes is producer. Mm-hmm. And his daughter Ariel Elwes, who found the script, bestsellers, and of course Cary Elwes is Cassian's brother and is Ariel's uncle. So So it was like a family affair, and it was kind of a fun idea to Cary and Cassian. They they knew Michael when they were kids. I mean, they'd met him when they were kids and stuff. So they'd always wanted to work with him. And Cassian just done a film with him, but Carrie always wanted to work with him too. So it was like a fun opportunity for him to come onto the set. And Carrie right away came with this fully formed idea of like how, what he wanted this character to be. And I was like, yeah, okay, like, let's do it, you know? And so it was just such a fun scene. Again, it's not, I want to talk about it. It's hard to talk about it without giving it away. But to also to stage it, you know, was also really fun. Like, I finally we found a location that was going to work. And I really liked, you know, these big columns. And at the top, there's the engraved names of all these writers up there. Probably nobody notices, but I notice these things. And then, yeah, of course, and there's Michael and Carrie, who's just that moment is as he's walking towards them. It's like, you already know, like, oh God, like the way he's walking and everything. You're just like, okay, like what? And Aubrey's like, okay, yeah, okay. He thinks he's Truman Capote. Like he's got an insane ego, you know, but you gotta be nice, whatever she's saying. And then of course it's almost too late. Like it's they meet and yeah. So that day was actually really hard because there was all these extras there. Carrie was there and Shakira was there and everybody was there that day somehow. So trying to coordinate all the extras, trying to coordinate that moment with them on two different levels of like it's up and down and there's a track on one side. Yeah. So I was juggling a lot that day. And then also there was like, not to give so much away, but there was also, we had to have like a stunt person and
safety
stuff. And yeah,
for sure.
Carrie didn't do his own stuff.
Well, like he did all of his own stuff, but it has to be like coordinated. You have to be very safe with, I mean, yeah. Because you don't want to mess with Michael Caine.
With the cane, yes.
Yes, so, well said, yeah.
So what you're saying is that Cassian is like, I really want you to do this film, but I've got this brother who is not getting a lot of work.
I really don't know him from anything.
Oh my God. Right. Of course, like, God, the Princess Bride and all that stuff. Like when I was a kid, like, wow. Also all the crew, I have to say, I mean, all the women on the crew were really excited because of the Princess Bride, all that stuff. And Carrie is lovely. And now, my God, he's got all these huge films coming out, Mission Impossible and all these other things that he's been doing. So, yeah. So we're lucky to have him fly in there for this cool little cameo. So, yeah, it was really fun.
What about Scott Speedman? How did that happen?
Yeah, that was also kind of perfect casting and timing. Scott is a fellow Canadian too, so this was a Montreal production, right? But also UK. So, but luckily Scott was available. He's living in LA. But this was also just a fun, like a perfect kind of, you know, he got it right away as well. Like what this character was, how he was going to work, like this great sort of. Smarmy kind of, but smart, but also, you know, he would just sort of fit the bill perfectly. And it was fun to watch them work together. And also, you know, there's again, for me, the whole time, the biggest challenge was this sort of balance of, of like tone, you know, so it's comedic, but also some more serious moments. So, it was fun playing with all these guys with that.
Yeah, and I like Speedman's character too because I find him interesting because he's not just like an obvious like foe, right? I mean, I get the impression he probably is kind of a prick, but the character, I mean, obviously not Scott, but there is some stuff there. Like he does seem to kind of care for Lucy, maybe. Like I don't know, that's kind of, you know, under the scene. Maybe I'm reading too much into that. But,
no, they have a relationship. They have like a relationship, obviously from before. But it's also both of them are kind of in this cutthroat world of publishing, where they're at the beginning, at least they're trying to get things done. They're trying, you know, it's New York, it's the publishing world. They gotta, you know, so it's, they've got to be sharks, and both of them are, you know, so when I said smarmy, it's more like in her point of view, you know, so it's not like, it's like he's, because she knows that he's right a lot of times, but she doesn't want him to be, you know? So it's yeah. like, and then obviously they've had this romantic relationship. And then at the end, like, she gets to turn the tables in a way, but I'm glad that you say that too, because it's not, you know, there's more to that. Yeah. It's not just
twirling a mustache or
no, he's not like I'm the evil, like whoa. Yeah. It's no, they have a relationship, they've got a history, it's yeah. there for a reason. He knows her dad, like, you know, all that stuff is there. And this they did this scene with them, this motel room, you know, and we did a whole bunch of different, like, we did it lots of different ways. And but I think Scott did a great job too. It worked out really well. Yeah.
Yeah. You alluded to that scene with Carrie Elwes as being like, a difficult day, but what was your toughest day on set?
I wonder if it was that day. The weird thing is though, like, this is the weirdest thing is I, you know, first feature film, all these amazing actors, all this stuff. My dad had just passed away. I had like a lot of pressure, yeah. but then I would go home at night. And even if things were like things were rough or like we hadn't solved a certain problem, I remember being like really stressed out, but then like sort of waking, sort of having this realization, like, but I'm having a really good time.
Yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah.
And it was such a weird sort of parallel feeling of, but something's wrong because I'm having fun, you know, like I was like, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. I was like, wait, there's something wrong with me now, because I was like, well, we didn't have to solve this. And then, oh yeah, I got to do that. And I'm like, oh no, what about this problem? Oh, that? And then I'm like, wait a minute, I'm still having a good time. Like, it made no sense. But then I realized like, okay, wow. Like I really like this. I really like this yeah. job, you know? So even the hardest days, and some were really hard. Like some, you know, it was winter, there was snow. There were days that, you know, everyone was tired, or we didn't get enough time to shoot, or whatever. The multitude of issues and problems that arise, and some are just completely ridiculous that you wouldn't, you know. And I remember actually my first AD, Eric, he was great. Like, but then they would take the piss out of me sometimes, because like for one day we were it's these scenes with Lucy and her father and Harris at this home, and we were trying to get into this room and it was like a wellness kind of center. Mm-hmm. And for some reason we couldn't get this room that I had originally, so we had to change the whole thing. But anyway, but then I was like, why can't we get into this room? Like, I want to go into this room. And he's like, no, because they're doing goat yoga in there. And I was like, what? I was like, what? I was like, but why? Why are they doing goat yoga in here right now? I'm like, I need, like, this is crazy. Like, who do they think they are doing goat yoga right now?
What is going on in Montreal?
but then Eric just starts laughing. He's like laughing, like almost crying. He's like, no, Lena, they're not doing goat yoga in there. He's like, we just can't, you know? And I'm just so like, so earnestly like trying to like, I'm like, what? I'm like, oh, you asshole, you know? Well, fine. Just get the, just like every, I don't know. It was, so even when it was like stressful, it wasn't stressful. It was just sort of silly, you know? So it was fun. It was really fun. Yeah.
I get the sense that I mean, we've run it. When we've talked to directors before and ask about the toughest day on set and everything, it's the problem solving. Just a fun thing, right? It's like a game almost, that you had this thing planned and now it's not going to work. And then, you know, whenever, I don't know how long it takes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes, you come up with something that, oh, this might even be better than what I thought of.
Oh yeah. There's so many, this is actually what I mean, it's true. I love that element, because I love, it's exactly as you say, to solve the problem, to come up with a creative solution, mm-hmm. to make it work. Like whether it's this room that doesn't work, then we go, or whether, oh, we can't shoot outside. You guys, I don't remember it was, Sorry, I talked to other people this morning, so I can't remember the conversation.
That's fine.
But there's a scene of Michael outside of the bookstore. No, you guys said it, outside of the bookstore, and Ellen inside the bookstore. But so that day, it's like it was pouring rain, and which was great. It worked for us, but that was not planned. You know, we didn't ask the climate gods to rain on us. So it was just pouring rain, and like Michael really did not want to get wet. He didn't feel like going in the rain or whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so we came up, well, he's going to have an umbrella, but it's going to be like broken, out of shape umbrella. And then he's just going to throw it, you know, like he's just going to do whatever.
Such a great moment. He just tosses the shit
exactly.
out of it.
Exactly. So I'm like, and then just talk like, that's it. That's, and then it becomes part, and it's just adds to it. You know what I mean? It's just like, so there's a little example, and then there's the suggestion. It's just part. Okay. Just do that. Yeah. And perfect. And then you've got the guy who's like, oh, okay. And he's trying to put it back. He doesn't know what to do. And he's letting him into the bookstore. And yeah. So things like that, that's the fun stuff. I mean, you like pray that it's works and then you're not just coming up with some total crap. But that's the fun stuff. And if you have a great crew and great people surrounding you, then you should be able to come up with something and hopefully make it work.
Did you have two actors from Scott Pilgrim in this movie? Did we have some Scott Pilgrim kind of discussions going on set on this movie?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, they'd met each other. I mean, so you're talking about Ellen Wong, of course.
Yeah.
And Aubrey and Ellen, by the way, we haven't mentioned her, but she's fantastic. She's also fantastic in the film. Mm-hmm. And I love working with her. She's so great. And
I love her.
Yeah. So of course they those guys chatted amongst themselves about, you know, memories of that time or whatever. But I think we were I maybe at lunch and stuff like that. They were talking about that. But that was that was shot in Canada, in Toronto.
Yeah.
Like years and years and years ago. So yeah. So those guys definitely went down a little memory lane together. But I don't think they've been in touch since then. Yeah. So
I always wonder about that type of stuff whenever I see the same, like, actors who are in the, and they may have not even shared scenes in the movie, but they, you know, do they go and they talk about that type of stuff and everything? I don't know why that interests me so much, but, you know, I had to know.
Yeah, maybe in the trailer or something, but I was on set, so I wasn't privy.
And did Scott Speedman share Felicity stories? That's, you know.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah, totally.
We did not mention Felicity. I don't remember that, but for no good reason. Like, I remember watching that like a long time ago. Yeah.
I mean, Lena, she cut her hair. I mean,
such an awful thing.
It was
that such a big deal?
I don't know. That was like pre-Twitter craze kind of thing. It was weird.
It was before Britney did it. So that's why it was like a big
thing. That's true.
Yeah. Geez.
Guys, anything else? I know we have to wrap it up.
Oh, God. I want to talk to you for like the entire day about the practicalities of all these things.
Yeah.
No. I do want, I'll just mention, because we do have to get you out of here. I love the music in this.
Oh, yes.
It's such a fucking miracle to me for a movie to get made overall. But what people think of, you know, pre-production and production is certainly not the end of it, right? You have to figure out the score. You have to figure out the editing. You have to figure out all the post-production stuff. And those little touches, it's like finishing a dish as a chef, right? Like you have to make sure that it's not just half-baked coming out. And I think to me, the music in particular, your choice to go with classical and opera for a lot of this. And the editing choices, I thought, just really added to the full thing. You had several wonderful performances, but you have to mold that into something cohesive. I think you did a great job with it.
Thank you so much. And I have to do the shout out to my editor, Arthur, and also to my amazing composer, Paul, who I still have not met in person.
Oh, wow.
We talked on, we like did our FaceTime yesterday, just like catching up. And we're just like, oh my God, we still haven't even met in person. It's so messed up. Mm-hmm. But we all are like, you know, worked really, really well together. And he brought a ton of his talent and like great original music. And Arthur, my editor, he's brilliant and like became a really good friend. And all those choices with Lucy, the more classical, uptight kind of stuff. And then with Michael R. Harris's character, the more sort of bluesy, like sort of drunken bar. Those, again, really specific choices. And I'm really glad you guys appreciate them. I appreciate that you do. Yeah. So thanks for this
conversation.
We
appreciate that you appreciate.
We all appreciate.
We're doing a leveling thing with our appreciation. That's amazing. Okay. I hate to do this, guys. I could also talk to Lena Rosler all day. The movie is called Bestsellers. It comes out in theaters and on demand September 17th. Thank you so much for talking to us, Lena.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, you guys. I hope to chat again soon.
You're awesome. Good luck with the movie. This is fantastic. We're going to talk it up as much as possible.
That'll do it for this interview. It's Chris Atkins and Barrett Scher and Jonathan Woggins. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit CinemaSins.com.